Welcome to the Spa Girls Podcast, the self-publishing podcast for authors. You're in the right place for the best marketing, writing, and publishing advice, plus interviews with industry experts and best-selling authors. I'm Shah Barrett.
I'm Cheryl Phipps.
And I'm Trudy J. Hello.
Welcome Hello. Back.
Yes, welcome
it's
back.
It's just the three of us here today. Wendy's off doing other things at the moment, but we are productivity princesses.
We are, which conveniently starts with P.
Self-appointed productivity.
So this episode is Top 10 Productivity Hacks for Authors, brought to you by the letter P.
Yes, a little bit of Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Elmo, okay. I can
do
my
Elmo. No, not with the Elmo voice. No, no, you did that last week. No. Oh, dear. All right.
All right, then. So because we're productivity princesses, we thought we'd do some P's. And so number one is planning.
Yeah. Time to get the stickers out, just saying, and the washi tape.
That's the preparation, though, isn't it? This is the planning, or is it?
Well, no, it's part of the vital planning process for me is every Sunday I have my planner and I go through what's coming up the next week, and that's when I do my funsie because it's like a creativity for me. So I use the stickers and the washi and all of that for the week ahead, and it makes me feel that I can go into the week organised. So that's on the sort of the weekly basis, but you know, that I've done the 12-week planning, which is, we've mentioned it many times before, but Sarah Cannon's Heart Breathing Channel, she talks about the HB90 system, which is planning, you know, your writing life in 90-day blocks as well. So it's just, I think it's, personally, I think it's good to have a plan in the way that it works for you.
And I think I had a coach who was talking about planning and planning ahead, because I am a little bit of a last minute do it all, and I don't like to, but it freaks me out, the idea. So people come to me and say, what are you doing in July? And it's now March, what are we, February? And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing in July, but I feel uncomfortable telling you what, you know, booking something in, like that freaks me out. But she was talking about being proactive rather than reactive, and that I think is a massive productivity thing, like not just reacting to things that are happening and kind of being all kind of that's how you kind of get a bit chaotic and disorganized. If you can be proactive and actually plan it and do things in a more organized way, you can actually achieve more, and that's the basics around it.
Well, and I think
it's not about knowing what every day is going to hold for you, but it's knowing what you need to do every day to get to the end of it. Whatever plan you have.
Some of them do, though. Like Brooke Castillo plans out a year in advance and down to the granular, like I will do this at 10 a.m. in 6 months' time. Like
I think it's got to do what works for you. And I think it's also planning planning time off as well, isn't there, is really important too. So it's not just all about planning what you do, it's planning what you don't do.
Because the thing about planning is also that it's, so for example, if you've got kids, and we all know what kids are like, they come in at any time and disrupt and disorganize and create chaos. I've just come off the school holidays, so I'm feeling 8 weeks of school holidays. Oh my God. But what you with that kind of stuff, when you're planning it, you can kind of say, okay, this is my kid time when I can be 100% focused and involved and in person with my kids. And then this is my work time, and say to the kids, look, I will be there 100% with you when it's your time, but this hour or whatever is my time, and I need you to go away and read quietly or do whatever. As long as they're not a baby, I guess you can't say that to babies.
No.
You know, older kids, you can kind of say, look, this is, and then you get to focus, because if you're trying to do a little bit and you let the kids come in and they're, you know, all that kind of stuff, then you're taking away from your family time as well, because you're worrying about the things. Like that's what I find anyway. It's like, if you don't give yourself this actual time to do your stuff away from the kids, then when you're with the kids, you can't concentrate properly because you haven't been able to do what you
need. It's one or the other, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, and it actually is better for the kids, because then you get to focus on them properly when it's the kid time versus all of it being intermingled. It's just, sorry, that was a very long way of saying just make sure that you.
Okay, first so thing done.
That's planning done. So the next one is preparation.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was saying, oh, maybe that's the same as planning, but Shah assures me that it's not. No. So she's going
to
explain
why. I think it's different in that planning is, to me, planning is, if you know the tasks that you have to do, it's making sure that those are lodged somehow in your schedule. Mm. Preparation to me is more about, okay, I'm planning to write and publish a book in the next 3 months. So preparation to me is doing those steps that you do in order to do that. So mm-hmm. it might be if it's a new genre, you know, market research, but you know, you're looking at covers, you know, it's all of that kind of preparing, you know, conditioning, yeah, training, if you like.
I almost think of it as like when I'm writing a book and I'm doing the plotting. That's the preparation. That's the setup so that I know the characters. I know what's going to happen. Mm. I know, universal fantasies that are going to be in each book, each chapter or whatever. And then when I come to write, which is actually the doing of it, then I can just move through it much more smoothly because I've done the preparation.
Yeah.
So there's that.
And I've got it too for the marketing side of things because I do mine out for a year. And then... Once I've decided what I'm going to do over that year, then I have to break it down. Like if I'm going to do a series promotion and I need book one to be free, I have to make sure that I've put that in and allocated those 3 days. And then what's going to happen with the other books? Am I going to do some swaps? Then I've got to contact those people, that sort of thing. So that's where I think the divide for advertising comes from the preparation, from the planning. So it is like a next level.
So one thing that I did discover, and I have to admit I've never done this before, but it's all over the internet when I was doing research for this podcast, was the 1-3-5 rule. Have you guys heard of that one?
No, I have not.
So it's one thing, one big task that you're going to do. You break it down into 3 medium-sized tasks, and then you break it down into 5 smaller tasks that you do. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like then you...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so you don't have to be doing that. So if we're talking about marketing, say the one big task is maybe a launch of a book. You could break it down into 3 smaller things and then 5 even smaller. Then you can be working on the smaller stuff without having to kind of feel like the launch is too big. I get overwhelmed by the big stuff. And you can work on one smaller thing that's a part of the overall project and not feel like you're overwhelmed, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's supposed to work really well. I would go out and look at and research it a bit more because my description of it may be imperfect, but there's definitely a lot of people who swear by it and a lot of
people say that's important. You're doing something like that, it's often related to a timing thing.
Mm.
So if you're launching, there's going to be stuff to do pre-launch and then as the book is launching and then afterwards to keep that tail going. So I think that would work really well for something like that. I mean,
I agree.
What are the things you need to do to make those things happen at that right time?
Mm. Yeah.
No, I really like that. That's good. Yeah.
So that's a tip for preparation. Any other things that we do that you guys can think of for preparation?
No, I think I think we've pretty much covered it on that one there.
Okay, yeah.
No?
Editors, don't forget editors. Yeah.
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 Booking them and things like that.
I think the preparation thing is that it's good to go into the main task having had the setup in the right place rather than, and if you're thinking of it in the writing context, it's like the difference between you sitting there trying to figure out what's going to happen next in the book and having a block on it and not being able to figure it out versus you having it. And this is for me as a plotter, and I get that pantsers are going to see this differently, but you know, having and being able to look into my chapter synopsis and go, okay, this is exactly what's supposed to happen in this chapter. Mm. It's going to set it up perfectly for the next chapter, and I just write it. And for me, and if I have to sit there and wonder, or I do a lot of writing and then it goes nowhere because I've gone in the wrong direction because I write myself into a corner, that to me is less productive than if I know exactly where I'm going and go
in
exactly
a perfect in
that
world,
direction.
And a perfect world.
I know, and I do it too. Like when I'm writing, I go off on tangents and I go and I come up with brilliant ideas that were way better than anything I planned. But I mean, at least if you have that structure in place, it's almost it's that structure, right? The preparation is putting the structure in place so that you can move faster through the process of actually doing something. So,
it's like having a rule that you can then give yourself permission to break because it wasn't set in concrete anyway.
Well, exactly, right? Like it doesn't matter if you break it, but at least if it's there to help you along. Mm. Okay, so the next one is, so I called it procrastination. And it's just because I was trying to find a P word, not because I'm suggesting that you should all go out and procrastinate. Although we have had someone on the show talk about, and I think it was Julia Roberts, the creativity coach. I only remember that was because it's the same as the actress Julia Roberts. Anyway, and she talked about positive and negative procrastination. And so, first of all, if you're procrastinating and you know that you should be writing, look at why you're doing that, and maybe it's positive procrastination. You're vacuuming because you're just turning over ideas in your head, and it's okay. That's just how you process. But if it's negative procrastination, as in you were supposed to have the book in last week and you still haven't started, then maybe that's not a good thing. You're in trouble, and maybe you need to figure out. And so some of the things I had around this were learning to say no to other things. Yes. So learning to say no to the person who wants you to go and have a coffee with them and gossip when you need to be writing or whatever. I don't know. And prioritizing things. Oh no, that's the next one. So don't prioritize yet. And if it's negative, maybe look into the stories that you're telling yourself. Like, why are you procrastinating? What is it? Yeah. Maybe you've got something there that you're saying, oh, I'm not good enough, or I don't know what I'm doing.
Or maybe it's just overwhelming how much you have to do, which goes back to your 1-3-5 idea as well. Yeah. So I think everybody does it to a certain degree at times. Some of us get stuck in that for longer than others. I think positive. I think it's positive or negative procrastination is something worth looking at.
And I think with procrastination, it's always, honestly, I think it's just always about what's in your head, don't you think? Like there's always.
I think it's always rooted in fear of some type. If you're looking for any further reading on that, Stephen Pressfield's work on resistance with creatives and writers is really kind of, I guess, would be the most well-known tomes on the subject. But also Eric Maisel, M-A-I-S-E-L, let me just double check that. I'm pretty sure that's right. He has done a lot of work on kind of, like, he's a psychologist, I'm pretty sure, as well, around that. So there's you're not alone. That's what I'm trying to say. But there's some very good books out there and online, TED Talks as well on this site. Insightful.
So don't procrastinate is our point, unless it's positive procrastination, and then maybe we could give you permission for a short period of time.
That's more percolation.
Depends how long it's for. Depends if what you're doing is actually going to have move it along and have a positive outcome.
Absolutely.
So if you're procrastinating, find a way through that, because that's not helpful. Okay, so the number four is prioritize. So basically figure out what's most important and then do it. Yeah. And actually this is where I had learned to say no to people and stay focused on what you want to achieve. So this is where the planning and the preparation comes
in. I was just going to say, this is very much very big on the planning side of it as well, because, going back to what Sarah Cannon recommends, is that you actually, if you're doing your, for example, next 3-month plan, you block out the days that you just know you're not going to get to the writing and you don't count those in the time that you have. And I think all of us overestimate how much time we have to do something. Mm-hmm. Always in the short term, we always think something is going to take less time than it actually does. And we often overestimate, 90-day planning, I've got 90 days. Well, actually, when you take out commitments, family commitments, health, you need some buffer time in there, blah, blah, blah. Oftentimes you're down to 60 or 70 days out of that 90 days. And I think a lot of us overestimate how much time we actually have, whether it's on a month or actually in the day. So
I know that it takes me about 4 months to write a full length novel about 60K, but if something crops up, something that I cannot avoid, then that 4 months is already blown out.
Yeah.
So for me, I know that I'm writing a bit faster, so I'm still saying 4 months because I think you need to have some sort of idea in your mind of the length of time to do things. But you know, I've left it at that because I know that it's generous now,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to allow me that time. So I think the further down your writing career, the easier it is to make sure that, you know, like, I mean, I could push another book in there into a year, but that would not do me any favours at all.
Yeah.
That would just create more stress. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's very important to know what you can achieve.
And I think, too, for prioritisation, it's also you can't do all the things all the time. You can't do all the different types of advertising. You can't do all the promos. You just can't unless you're – no, nobody's superhuman with 15 arms that can do it all. So I think you need to prioritise what it is you're going to do, like not just in the book creation but also in the book promoting side of things as well, and do those well rather than trying to do set up ads over here and I'll do that course on BookBub ads over, like, you just it's just
you end up doing
there's
nothing
a recipe
well.
For non-productivity then.
It's what they say. There's that whole thing of jack of all trades, right? Like,
yeah.
So there's someone who's average at lots of different things, or there's people who have gone deep and are specialists. And I think the people that we have had on the podcast, the one that you see most commonly is people who have gone deep on one or two things, like A, the writing, and B, one form of marketing. Like, there won't be someone who's awesome at all the types of marketing. It'll be someone who's quite good at Facebook ads, or down on one thing.
We're going to talk about kind of positive thoughts and positive talk a little bit later on, I'm sure. But, you know, I think it's easy to think other people are doing it, and so therefore you should. They're not.
No. Not the successful ones anyway. There might be people in your sphere who
there'll be people
to be
trying, but
but it's not a good idea. So, and I think just sitting down, taking a breath and writing down what is most important, what you're trying to achieve, like, are you trying to win all the awards, or are you trying to make money, or are you trying to become famous? Like, what is actually your goal? And because what you do for those three things is completely different.
Yeah.
And and you need to know that to be able to know what you're going to do. All right. So is that good for prioritize?
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. So number five is positive talk.
Positive self-talk, eh? This is, boy, we're hard on ourselves. Isn't that the phrase that we so often have? I should be writing more. I should be writing faster. I should be learning how to do dictation. I should be looking into AI. I should be, should be.
So none of those things. So what we're going to say is we're going to be positive, and we're going to say, I am doing the things I need to do to get myself where I need to be.
Yeah.
And
in order to meet the goals that I have for myself, not somebody else's life that they're living.
I think
it's a good summation, actually.
honestly, just that's it. Don't be mean. Don't be mean to yourself, and just talk positively and be positive.
Kind
and positive to yourself. All right, so number six is play basically, or gamify gamify it, right? So if you're struggling and you're procrastinating and you're not getting what you'd want done, an awesome thing is to gamify it, make it into a fun thing. So it's not quite a gamification thing, but the first one I have on here is the Pomodoro, and that kind of does something to our brains, and you can write for 25 minutes and then you stop for five, and it just somehow seems easier and more doable than telling yourself you're going to sit down and write for 2 hours and and that's it, right? Like, there's just something about the Pomodoro that makes it easier, and we can figure it out.
Absolutely. I love it.
Do you guys do other stuff to gamify the writing for yourself?
Working on something that you don't want to be working on. Maybe you're finishing up a project.
Yeah.
And I do it all the time. I mean, I don't tell people I'm doing it, but I say to myself, if you can get this last chapter written, or you can get this bonus epilogue written, then you can don't have to do anything else on the book at all. You can work on your new project. Or you can make up some graphics or something like that, which I kind of like to do now. You know, as a bit of fun, bit of creativity in a different sphere. I'm always talking to myself about things like that.
word count would be another big one, right? Like, so
it's huge.
Beat my word count. How many words can I get in a day? How many words can I write in an hour? that sort of thing. Like you kind of
I have to write 2,000 words today, but what if I wrote three? You know, what if I wrote three? Then maybe later on the week I could have time off to do something else.
I think that's why also writing sprints with other authors is so good, because you can kind of see other people being really productive, and then you kind of makes you want to, well, me anyway, I makes me want to compete and want to make sure that I can kind of hold my own.
It's so exciting because we're all going to get together, the four of us are going to get together very, very soon. And that's one of the things that I'm so excited about, because I think I'm, because I'm writing some short paranormal cozies, and I'm thinking that I could probably, in the time that we spend together, get at least one of them done.
Wow. You know? Okay.
And just things like that. I know that we've done it in cafes and that sort of thing, and that's boosted your word count. But yeah, planning for something like that, this is what I'm going to do. So I'm actually going to plan the book to a certain extent, let's be honest, before I go. So I know what I'm going to be writing about.
That's awesome.
Go to the play. Yeah.
So that's and the other one I wanted to mention was the writing at the top of the hour thing that I learned off Melissa Storm actually years and years ago, and she said you write at the top of the hour, you start at 9 a.m. in the morning, and you write and write and write until you get to 1,000 words, and then you can stop, and then when you get to the top of the next hour, so 10 o'clock, you start again and you write and write and write 1,000 words, and I can write 1,000 if I'm going well and if it's all planned, and I can write 1,000 words in kind of half an hour or so, and then that gives me half an hour to go and do something else. But if I do that 4 or 5 times in a day, I've got 5,000 words, and it doesn't feel difficult when you do it. It feels, because you're having all these big half hour breaks and you're going away and maybe going and doing the washing or going and doing whatever, like, it doesn't feel that as hard as maybe if you sat down for a full hour and slogged it out and had to keep going. Because I think you get more and more tired as you go on. And then so by giving yourself these big, massive breaks, you somehow kind of, giving yourself the ability to keep going for longer, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
And even if you're not going to write 1,000 words in an hour, because everyone, that's not doable, you could have that time. You make it doable, whatever you can manage, you can then get up and move around. And that's really important as well.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be 1,000 words either. It could be like 500 words. Like just make it something that means that you can do it at the top of the hour. Because then if you're someone who writes slower, 2,500 words in a day could probably be a really big chunk for you. Like it just depends, and it just means it's that same process of like starting at the top of the hour and then stopping when you get to that number and then giving yourself that sort of fairly decent break. So, and that gamifies it for me, because then I'm like, right, okay, alarm set for the next hour and I'm going to get back and and how fast can I do that 1,000 words in and all that kind of thing. It's just silly little things that you just use to kind of.
Absolutely. It's important.
Yeah.
Not silly if it works.
No.
Okay, so number 7 is put pen to paper.
Which kind of goes with that, eh? I think it's like gamifying it so that the and maybe pen to paper as opposed to fingers to keyboard is one way of actually, you know, if you're kind of
changing it up.
Yeah.
Journaling, writing, doing free writing a la Anne Lamott, whatever her name is, bird by bird lady. And the other one with put pen to paper is that I think sometimes we think, or I used to think, I know I used to think, that you have to have like a 3-hour solid block of writing time to be able to get anything decent done. And what I've learned is that who has 3 hours uninterrupted?
Very, very few.
So, and I always remember, I mean, Wendy taught me first, and she said, I just write in the evenings while my husband watches TV. So I started doing that. I don't do that anymore so much, but and Elena Johnson, when she was on, she was talking about catching 10 minutes, while waiting for her child to.
Yeah, she had a car desk. I always remember that, like a little desk thing that she would put over the steering wheel.
I mean, I don't know if she still does that kind of thing, but that was just, you know, like when she was getting the
short bursts.
Short bursts are just as good as if you need to give 2 hours in a day, but you can't have a 2-hour set thing, look for the 15 minutes. You know, that's 8 15-minute sessions throughout the day, that maybe that's more doable for you. I don't know. But just make sure you're putting pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. Make sure that it happens, because that's the thing, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
No. Ready to move on, because in line with what you're saying, make sure it happens. The next one, P is?
Pivot. Pivot. It's not working.
If it's not working or if you're feeling just like you're betting your head against a brick wall, it's okay to pivot.
And that includes, like, there's that whole, what's it called? Something fallacy, sunk cost fallacy.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm. And so don't feel like just because you've put too much into something that you can't pivot and change because and it's not working.
And it's not necessarily writing. It could be covers. It could be a blurb that you've spent ages on and it's not working. I mean, it could be anything. It's okay to pivot. And I think, again, we've talked to so many authors that have actually done that. It might not have been a 180 degree turn. Mm. It might have just been a 55 degree. But there's something that they've shifted literally in their direction that has moved them forward in a way that wasn't happening previously.
And sure, sometimes you need to do something else and let whatever that is kind of percolate, you know? And often, I don't know about you, but sometimes I thought something's absolute rubbish and then I go back and read it, and it's not half as bad, or actually may just require a few tweaks.
Yeah.
Whereas you're talking about your own writing.
Throw it out. Pardon?
Yeah.
Are you talking about your own writing, not someone else's writing? Yeah.
Yeah, no, mine. You know, like you think, oh, just that's rubbish. I'm not going to use that. And, you know, and then you find out that it's after you've given it some space.
Yes. Yes.
But you did that, Cheryl. You pivoted from writing straight romance to the cozy mysteries. And I remember that discussion we were going through that and you were kind of a little bit worried about, oh, no, is this the right move and should I be doing it? But would you say it's been a positive experience?
It's been not only a positive experience but uplifting in a lot of ways because I've met some amazing people who have helped me. But, you know, my sounding boards and, you know, just – some of them are experts, I would say, in the industry as well. So I feel very grateful and fortunate, actually, for the Spy Girls because that's how I found a few people. But interestingly enough, I'm pivoting again because I write cozy mysteries, but they're contemporary cozy mysteries, and now I'm going into paranormal cozy mysteries. So there you go. Never say you just do one thing we're writers. We can write lots of things if we want.
And that's the thing. And you are the master of your domain and you can choose to do something else. It's okay.
The number of times I've seen recently authors saying, I wrote this crazy book and I thought no one would read it and it's my most popular yet kind of thing. Like K.F. Breen did that with the Magical Midlife series. I don't think she expected those books to be as popular as they are.
Yeah.
And I've just seen Shannon Mayer has just put out a book called Golden, or it is coming out soon. And it's like, I think the main character ends up as a golden retriever. Like, so it's not the urban fantasy.
No, quite a wolf.
Yeah, but it's actually really intriguing. And I don't know if it's got out yet or not. I can't, but I would bet money that it's going to be really popular, right? Like, and it's not your usual kind of thing. But it's going to, it just sounds really awesome.
I think as authors, sometimes you just have to do something that is a bit different and maybe it's not a good idea for your career in a lot of ways but sometimes
and sometimes you can pivot and it might not, but I guarantee you're going to learn something from it. Not pay dividends in the bank account, but it will in other ways. Even so if it's to tell you that no, actually I was on the right track before.
But that's okay. It's all data,
it's
right?
Okay. It's
all
information. Yeah, exactly.
I just think data. pivoting, and especially if it's not working though, if something's not working, don't just keep plodding along in the same, the definition of sanity, doing the same thing and expecting something to change. Like just, don't be afraid to try some new things.
And if it's about books, some books just don't hit. They just don't resonate. They can be well written technically. You could have spent all the money on the editing. You've got an appropriate cover. And just sometimes they just don't connect with the right readers. Mm. And it doesn't mean that you're a failure or that your writing's terrible or any of that. Just sometimes it's just not there.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just timing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What people want to read right then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's good. So number 9 is be picky. And so I want to explain what I mean by this
before I... No, I'll be interested to hear.
No, I just, it was be picky with how you spend your time is what I meant. And that was like, there's a lot of social kudos that goes to people who are busy, I think. And I think there's a lot of busyness out there in the world and it's not necessarily achieving things. So I could be perfectly amazingly busy for an entire day and achieve zero. So it's about be picky with how you spend your time. And that goes back to the planning and the prep, you know, everything we've already talked about. But
remember when you said to yourself, I'm going to give up my day job and I'm going to write full time. Remember how that sounded in your head? That meant you were going to go home and every morning you were going to get up and you were going to write all day long.
Yeah.
And did that ever happen? No. I don't think that happened to any author ever.
Exactly.
That made the change.
And those of us that aren't full-time writers, I think that's what we think it's like. I think there is a lot of mythology around you sit there and you've got your nice white desk, like all those beautiful photos, and you've got your lovely white keyboard and you've got like a steamy cup of coffee, or maybe you're in a moody kind of cafe with, you know, and you're just there and you just, the words just flow out. You know, you have this mythology. So, be picky about the myths that you buy in. I'll say that too. Little fantasy land.
You cannot have coffee with your friends every single day and get your writing done unless you're writing in a cafe with your friends and you're both doing it.
And you've got people who are bossy who tell you to actually write and not
that time. You need a timekeeper. I would also say be picky about the places that you spend time at when you're not writing, in terms of another connecting with other writers and or reading about the industry and that kind of thing, because there can be a lot of negativity out there. So you want to, I'd say, be positively picky. You know, choose to be in the places and to interact in the forums or to be in the Facebook groups that you find uplifting, let's say it that way, that support you. Also be mindful about the time, be picky about the time that you spend, how much time you spend on those. Because it can alter your how you see things as well. It can be very very easy to buy into other people's visions or how they see things, how, you know, how they are.
Easy to get sucked down into the mass hysteria.
Be picky about how you spend your drama. Time.
If so you don't write a book a week, then you're not
you're never going to make it. Or if you don't publish a book a quarter, you're never going to make it. You know, the whole, all of that sort of stuff.
You do you. So be picky. I just, with how you spend your time, who you're hanging out with, and what you're actually working on, be picky. So that was number nine. Number 10 is permission to make mistakes.
You've got it now. We're giving you a virtual gold card that says permission granted.
You have that permission. And I think because there's a lot of people you sit, and it links back into procrastination, it links back into prioritization.
And also perfectionism. I think a lot of us that tend to fall into the perfectionism trap, you want to be so ready, or you want to produce something so perfect in that first iteration that it's you don't ever produce.
And that's holds you back. And so permission to make mistakes, permission to put insert name here when you don't know the name of the character or the name of the town, or the, and you know, permission to have that shitty first draft, permission to just get it out there and just get it done. And then you've got something to work with, right? I think Nora says it. She's like, you know, can't just write, like just effing write, because you can't edit a blank page.
And I think you can have two kinds of permissions for the book that you finish, is that you have permission to put it up, even if you don't think it's perfect, but you've done your very, very best.
Absolutely.
And you have permission not to put it up.
Yeah.
Because you just, that's not how you want to be known. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So you get to choose.
You get to choose. Absolutely. This is a, is it? Choose your own adventure. This is life. Yeah, absolutely. And also permission to publish. If if, you know, money is tight at the moment for a lot of people, and if you, you know, we always talk here about the best practices, you know, having it edited, having a two market cover, professional cover, all of that kind of stuff. However, and I'm going to caveat this to say, if you've got something, don't let not having those things stop you from publishing, because there is now, you can do, there's different apps and things you can get to help with editing. You can do swaps with somebody else. It's really easy for me to say, don't let lack of funds hold you back from publishing, but I'm going to say it because I don't have many funds to do it. And, you know, get a pre-made cover for $50 or do a swap with somebody else, maybe another author friend that's really good at covers, for example, that, you know, that you can do it imperfectly is what I'm saying as well. Yeah. Supposedly imperfectly.
Just use it as a testing ground, you know.
And absolutely. See, and if you, and look, and chances are, I think, to give yourself permission to accept that your first book isn't going to be a USA Today bestseller. I think that's another thing. Yeah. Chances are it's not.
Yeah.
So,
it takes time.
Know, have good your training wheels
crossed.
Yeah.
We believe in you.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're part of the don't be afraid to make mistakes is that this is an apprenticeship, right? I think that's the best way to think of it. It's don't expect to write your first book and put it up there and have it suddenly be successful. This is so give yourself permission to kind of not know everything when you first start, and just it's a process, work through it, you know. You need to
And maybe have an apprenticeship pen name that you use. So I think
that's a really good idea, actually.
You know, it's not the one that you necessarily go to bed at night and close your eyes and see on the bestseller list, but maybe it's like, you know what, this is the best I can do now, as Cheryl said, and you put up the very best you can at that moment, and it's going to be under, you know, Paddy permission.
Then you can take it down and work on all the things that your reviewers or whoever have said is wrong with it, and put it up again under your real name or another.
And the thing is, here's the other thing: you have permission to, you don't have to keep it published the whole time. So, 10 years down the track, when you are, you know, whatever, it's okay.
And also, I just want to point out the possibility that maybe none of those terrible things will happen, and maybe the books will take off. And
and then you are going to be stuck with a pen name of Paddy Permission. And
so make sure it's a pen name that you actually
make sure it's a good pen. I'd Google it.
Don't use Paddy Permission. Use a cool pen name, but, you know.
Here's the thing. If it's on your hard drive, it's not going to, there's only so much you can learn from having a book that's not published.
I think it's the most exciting time in an author's life, that first book. I think the world is your oyster. Who knows how it's going to look?
But here's the thing. Every book is a first book for authors as well, because it's a new chance. It's a fresh new project out there into the world. So it doesn't, you know, what happened with one doesn't mean it's going to happen with the other. And it goes both ways. We've had talked to a number of authors that have had an absolute runaway hit with a particular series. Thought they'd done it with the second series or the second book and done everything the same. Again, going back to sometimes things just hit.
The other thing I wanted to mention about mistakes is that you don't get anywhere, you don't learn anything, you don't figure out how to do stuff without making mistakes. There is no way to do this perfectly. There is no way to know exactly what is going to happen at every point. And this is like, who was it? Thomas Edison inventing the light bulb. It was like, I don't know how many thousands of times he got it wrong, but he did, and it was thousands. And then it was the one that got it right because of iteration and continuing to try and do one better every time you put a new one up. And that's kind of what we have to do as authors, and that's how it works. Every book we write is one book better, and
agreed.
Through our careers, that's just how it works. And
that's it because every time you format a book, you're going to be a little bit faster, you're going to know how to do it a little bit better. Every time you go through a self-edit process, you're going to, you know, have remembered, there is my bugaboo. So, every So, falling upwards. I don't know. There's a
saying. I think it's failing fast, and that's doing things really quickly, and learning from your mistakes really quickly. I've heard that one around. But yeah, it's just I just think failure and mistakes are words that are maybe dirty words to or have been in the past, but they are sort of something that we just. They're a part of our lives and how we learn and how we're going to get better. So embrace them.
Yeah, maybe it's not failing. Maybe it's just learning. That's all it is.
Learning. Learning more as we go.
So that's a 10, but I would like to add a bonus one there and because I'm feeling generous and it is how it's Aquarius season. So that's how I think. Podcast is number 11 on the P list. Pretty much everything, every topic you can imagine is covered by the Spa Girls podcast and other podcasts, but our podcast, and we've got people talking on every single one of these P's. So do go back and listen. You can go to our website at spargirlspodcast.com. You can go to your podcast app if you can't see them all because it's a lot to go through because we're at, you know, 380 plus by now episodes. Go to our website and just type in a name, like, for example, we talked about Julia Roberts. And so, you know, they're all there. They're there. You've got an entire smorgasbord of podcasts.
Listen at your own leisure. But I did think of another P word.
Yeah? What?
Patreon.
Oh.
Yes. This is all free, like Shah said, everything is free. But, however, if you would like to sponsor us and help us keep the podcast going, please join us on our Patreon, which you can find. Where can they find us, Shah?
It's just patreon.com/spargirlspodcast.
Awesome. So, yeah, come join us on Patreon. So, yeah, that's our top 10, 12 list now. We've got 12
P's. I know. So, it's 10 P's and a bonus. That's a bonus. Bonuses. Bonus epilogues are our Patreon and our podcast. How's that?
So, hopefully you got something out of listening to us talk about how we are productive and what we do and things that we've learned about. And go and listen to other podcasts because it is definitely – this information is just an amalgamation of other people that we've had on the podcast, so definitely listen to previous episodes. But for now
– yeah, go ahead and be productive.
Yeah, go forth and be productive. Go right. We'll be back again next week with another episode of the Spa Girls podcast. But for now – farewell.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.